Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm going to send you over to Jason Rugard. He's going to tell us what we're talking about today.
Today we are going back in that time machine and looking at Blade 2 from March of 2002, a favorite in the series of mine, I'd say. I think this is the high point of the Blade franchise, even as far as that television story goes. And all that. No, Blade Trinity is, of course, the weak link in this chain. Wouldn't you agree?
I would. I did recently watch that as well after having watched this. And I got to say, yeah, it just doesn't deliver. Whereas this, whoa, does this deliver?
Yeah, you had the same issue I had with this, where you watch it and it's so good, it makes you want to watch the other ones. I went back and watched the first one, which it was better than I remembered it to be. I couldn't get through that third one. Even the first 10 minutes of the third one are okay, but after that, it's just, it goes downhill real quick. The problems in that film are the strengths, I think, of Blade 2, which basically has the best villain, best script, and best visual design of the first three, or the trilogy, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the second one here. And talking about design and set design, and really you're talking about direction, right? You're talking about Guillermo del Toro here, and it's interesting to see, clearly his style is in this, you know, way before Hellboy or Pan's Labyrinth or any of that, especially in the scene where the vampires break into Blade's hideout, right? And they're wearing that weird goggles and gears and stuff. Tell me that does not just, that's just Guillermo del Toro right there.
I even thought the club scene, not actually in the club, but when they're in the bowels of the club and there's the three fights going on and that look. The first Blade had kind of a gothic look, whereas this is more of a sci-fi horror. It really does play in that world. I thought this was a beautiful movie on the big screen. It did very well. Did you see this in theaters?
I don't think I did.
Yeah, I caught this in theaters and wasn't blown away by the first one when I saw it. Really loved this one. And just the dollars, this did about $52 million opening, $131 total, which would be the biggest, highest grossing film of Wesley Snipes' career. Kind of the high watermark of his career. He would go on to obviously have some legal problems, but he to me is Blade. Nobody else could capture this. I mean, they talk about rebooting this all the time. I'm not interested in seeing anybody on this role, are you?
No, the TV series was good, though, you have to admit.
It was better than expected.
So I think I would give it a shot if they wanted to reboot this. Especially, I mean, watch Blade 3, and you really get the feeling that Wesley Snipes he's kind of done the role, you know? And really, he feels very done in that movie.
Yeah, he seems bored in that movie, where in this one, and we know we can report that was kind of the case, but in this one, he seems fully engaged and present, and the movie is the better for it, probably because there was a stronger presence on set, keeping him engaged, in line, the whole thing.
But tell me that this isn't one of the better stories as well. The whole idea of him having to team up with the guy, the team that's specifically been trained to kill him, and now he has to lead them. There's a lot of like double crossing and just fun in general, just fun to be had where they're hunting. And I really like movies. And this again takes the original Blade and turns it on its ear. You know, the idea of like kind of the Blade character himself being a vampire, but then having to hunt vampires. And here now you have a group of technically bad vampires having to team with a Blade to hunt newer vampires.
I love the idea of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Yeah. And I play with that in this for a while because Blade is out for his agenda. The vampires are always out for their agenda. And this is the most comic book type story of the three films there. And it's the one that works the best. It's cleanly written. It has a through line. And for a 2-hour movie, this thing moves like a bat out of hell.
Well, it's very episodic though, isn't it? I mean, this one sits directly in the middle of these other two and it doesn't feel like it's part of any necessarily larger universe. It's very centered. You know, this is what's happening in this movie. And the opening in and of itself is almost television-like.
Yeah, where it has like a backstory. Yeah. It's almost like a title. Yeah, I thought that too. Like, for those who came in late, this is what happened in case you didn't see the first movie. And it's perfectly acceptable. You don't need to have any other information to move along with the story. It's just a great looking film. It improves on the first in a few ways. Most notably, though, like I said, was the villain and the script. But I love that the Reapers are basically junkies. There's a lot of metaphorical stuff and symbolism going on here, and that they feed on themselves if they don't get enough. There's some Anne Rice elements here, and they use the vampires as more than just window dressing, which the first and third do. They actually get into the factions within and the whole. I think that Underworld owes a lot to this series specifically, but this movie in general.
Yeah, it does have a very similar look to this, I would admit. And just in tone and like action wise and whatnot. And I did think of that as well, because they have in Underworld, they have the bullets that are that emit the UV light when they shoot them and stuff like that. So it's very, very similar.
Yeah, you know that it's got that look in that hierarchy within the villain's world, whether it be vampires or werewolves in Underworld, when it's vampires here. But I thought also, it's a little confusing to me that Scud, I can't think of this guy's
Norman
name.
Norman Reedus. This is Daryl from The Walking Dead.
Daryl? Meet my other brother Daryl? A different show. I think that he looks a little too much like Stephen Dorff in the first one.
He does have a Stephen Dorff look to him, but I didn't think that, or I didn't, it, didn't that didn't come in my mind, but you're right, he does look like him.
I like the idea, obviously, here, the blood pact that you talked about, that that element of the story where they bring in the supporting characters, which doesn't work at all in Blade Trinity at all.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I like that here as well. I just like the idea of people going after the monsters. You know what I mean? Like, that's a little more exciting to me than the monsters just chasing people and killing people. Although that can be fun, but it's also a lot of fun to have characters who are kind of badasses. Technically, they can die, and a lot of them do die in this movie. A lot of the guys don't make it out, but it is just a lot, I don't know, more fun for me to watch Blade, you know, gear up and get ready to go in. And when they go into the sewers, especially, I love that stuff. And it reminds me a lot of kind of things like Aliens and Predator type stuff. Like, you had mentioned sci-fi before, and it definitely does kind of have that feeling.
Yeah, that mid-sequence when they're hunting the Reapers in the bowels of the club, I think that's very similar to like Alien 3 and things like that, where this kind of ragtag group of pirates is out looking for the monster.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And this is definitely Guillermo del Toro, I would say, at his best. And I think mainly because he's reined in a little bit here by the budget, which is something that I feel like once he gets running with something, you know, you move on to things like Hellboy 2 and really anything beyond that. And I don't know, he loses kind of the thread of the story, it feels like, for a lot of those things. In a sense, just so that he can rather focus on the visuals and the special effects and the monsters and the world and things. And in this, it doesn't happen so much because the world building kind of is small. It's relatively little, really, and it kind of already established from the first film.
Yeah, it's a smaller movie than I remember it being, story-wise, and just the way it's structured. And as Guillermo del Toro has gained notoriety and a critical acclaim, you've gone sour on the guy. You were a big Guillermo del Toro fan up until Hellboy 2, and I remember you telling me that it was imagination run amok, and it was too much overload per visual scene, and that seems to be a theme that he's had for a long time thereafter. But I do think that this movie was instrumental in many reasons. One, it got him some sort of commercial success, and two, it united him with Ron Perlman, who absolutely steals the show.
Well, he's made movies with Ron Perlman long before this.
How do you really? Oh, yes. I didn't realize that.
Some of his Spanish movies have Ron Perlman in them. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like, I can't remember the movie, the horror movie where they go out into the woods with, Bruce Campbell.
It's
Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. It's kind of, the same deal.
It's his De Niro and Scorsese. Exactly. You know, it's his muse. Gotcha. I didn't realize that, because my only exposure to Del Toro, and this was rather recently, this was my first exposure to Del Toro. I never saw Kronos when I was younger. Everybody really raved about it. Never took the time to watch it. Oh, well, there you go. And just recently, as in like last year or the year before, I went back and looked at Mimic based on your recommendation all these years. And it's a dumb movie, but it looks similar to this in a lot of ways.
It's a stupid movie, but it is a giant bug movie, and it is fun. I think it's really fun and has some cool twists, but it is really well directed. You know, this guy, if you go back and look at his older movies where he's kind of under the gun and under the pressure of the budget and stuff, he really pulls it out of just nowhere.
Yeah, and Mimic was one of those early mid-90s Weinstein movies that had those terrible box arts, kind of like Phantoms.
Yeah, Dimension.
And things like that. Dimension, that arm of Miramax. So it just looked very unappealing, but it was very good, in fact, for what it is.
I like Mr. Funny Shoes.
Did you know that Stephen Norrington was offered the chance to come back after the success of the first one, but turned it down, and in doing so, Del Toro was allowed to kind of come in and play with the overall story structure. Do you think this would have been the same film without him, or do you think that he was instrumental in the success?
Well, I think he was instrumental. You know, had this been a Norrington movie, you would have wound up with another straight cut. I don't want to say boring, but just, I don't know.
Run of the mill,
Norrington,
I think.
Films, aren't... they just don't, the stories just don't take any leaps and bounds. You know, there's no danger there in any of his stuff. You know, it's very safely told films, which is fine. They're good. He's a great gun for hire. He doesn't do anything anymore. But I quite like him. I love Death Machine.
Yes.
I don't know. I think definitely this is Del Toro all the way, and he's what made this such a great movie. I mean, look at the other two, right? Norrington on one side, and then you have Goyer trying his hand at directing on Blade Trinity, and both, you know, nowhere near as good as this.
Goyer had directed a film with Snipes in 2002 that went straight to video, Zigzag. Yeah. Snipes was in three or four different movies in this year of 2002, including Undisputed, a great Walter Hill movie that went really unnoticed in its theatrical release with Snipes and Ving Rhames. But this was the big movie of the year for him. Like I said, the high watermark in his filmography from a box office standpoint and maybe from a commercial standpoint. I know he did some really good critical stuff with Spike Lee and some other independent films.
But his action movies even throughout the 90s I thought were kind of even bigger than Blade. Blade just felt... I don't want to say commercial, but maybe less commercialized. Like, there was just a lot less about Blade. Whereas, you do a movie like Passenger 57 or whatever, and it's like, it's everywhere.
Well, this movie has come into the focus a little bit more, the Blade character in the franchise lately, because it was out that Snipes was trying to get Black Panther off the ground throughout the 90s. They couldn't get it done, so he turned his attention to this. I think that great call, because they wouldn't have been able to do anything with that character.
It would have been so cheesy and bad looking. Yeah.
It would have buried any possible revival for it for even longer than today. So good call in making Blade. And then Blade now has the kind of cultural status of being the first Marvel movie to make it to the big screen that wasn't a total joke. You know, it wasn't some B movie. It isn't a B movie, but it was a high budgeted B movie.
Yeah,
and it got a lot of attention.
The first Blade definitely is a B movie. This is definitely, I would say this is, you know, A minus A. And the third movie is made and is sold as an A movie, but is really a C movie.
Is a C minus movie. You're being kind. And the third one, also, I mean, we're talking a lot about the other movies in the franchise, but hey, that's what you're getting on a Blade podcast. But Ryan Reynolds, who, like, for the umpteenth time was in a superhero film, it's unbelievable how many tries this guy's had before he hit with Deadpool.
Yeah.
I mean.
And he really, would be the credit to why Blade Trinity turned out so bad, which is interesting enough. I mean, that movie starts off with him doing the voiceover. Both the other movies is Blade doing the voiceover. Why is Ryan Reynolds doing the damn introduction? I don't understand it.
They couldn't get Snipes back in the room to do the ADR, probably. There's probably some truth to that. Oh, man. Are you looking forward to a reboot here? Like, if they get Idris Elba or Michael B. Johnson or somebody of that ilk?
Yeah, definitely. I would. I thought Elba was possibly looking at James Bond, so maybe that's not even a possibility for Blade. But I don't know. Michael B. Jordan doesn't seem like he has enough edge, but I could be wrong. He's a great actor, so he could pull that out.
Yeah, there's about 40 other actors that we're not mentioning that could also do these roles, but those are the big names at the moment that keep getting tossed around for every franchise that's out there, it seems like. And they're both outstanding actors, regardless of color. I mean, they're just fantastic actors. But I would like to see this character revived in some way or fashion. If they are doing things like talking about bringing back Swamp Thing, why not bring back Blade? I think we can work him in there. I mean, there's a lot of strange characters in that Marvel universe that we haven't explored yet. Maybe a Blade Howard the Duck crossover.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be fantastic. I don't know. I mean, yeah. Wouldn't it be great if Blade could join like the MCU or something?
I just miss this. Yeah, right. It would be. I just miss this type of movie. This is kind of like The Crow and things like that. Yes. These kind of melancholy goth movies that were very prominent for a while and highly visualized and stylized. And we don't really get these anymore.
No, we don't. We don't get them hardly at all. I'm trying to think of something. I mean, really, we get big budget, sleek, and even when you go down to like the B and C level, they try to really replicate that Marvel level of filmmaking now.
Yeah, even things like Sharknado, you can see touches.
I like that you call it Sharknado.
I always call it Sharknado. No, I don't know why.
Did I do it right that time.
Sharknado. I see. I think it's more exciting when it says Sharknado. It's like neato.
It's like Shake a Spear when she says Shake a Spear in Scary Movie 2. The only one.
Yeah, you might. Is this on? Hello? Anyone out there? Can you see me back there? Anything else you want to throw into our Blade 2 podcast? Were you happy we went back and watched this one? Were you excited to see it again?
Yeah, I was very happy. I was kind of looking forward to revisiting this on my own. So if we do it for a podcast, even better. I would recommend this. If you haven't seen this, if you have seen it, it's been a while, definitely check this out. It's one of the better movies I've seen in a long time.
I'd say this is totally a testament to Guillermo del Toro's aggressive, almost like a young man's movie in a way. Right. You know, it feels like a furious, aggressive, blistering little movie that has a commercial prospects and aspects to it. But it's also a great record of the charisma of Wesley Snipes and what a star he was before he became irrelevant in a lot of ways. I mean, he really was the man before names like Denzel became huge box office stars and Will Smith and things like that. It was Wesley Snipes. He was the guy. I mean, even Spike Lee used him as a muse for quite a while there.
Yeah, and he does the one-liners in this as well. So he has the fun in the Blade.
Is this the first superhero movie where it's just a given that the superhero knows martial arts?
Yeah, how does he know martial arts? They don't really cover that in his backstory, do they?
Well, not only does he know martial arts, in this one, the Reaper knows martial arts as well. Did you notice that when they're fighting on the plank?
Maybe if you become a vampire, do you know martial arts?
You become like so in tune with your body?
Yeah, because they're basically ninjas, right? I mean, when they snuck into his hideout, they were all in ninja gear, and everyone has swords and stuff.
Yeah, so everyone in this world is classically trained in some sort of form of martial arts. Whether Taekwondo or Jiu-Jitsu or something like that. I was noticing that throughout this. And I thought, I can't recall a time before this. I mean, you had like, remember Phantom, things like that. They would just throw shots or maybe grab a guy's arm and toss him. But there was no real martial art going on. And I mean, might be wrong. If listeners are out there and you can think of one, throw it in the comments section of the video. But I can't think of anything.
Yeah, it's a sign of the times, I guess, right? Martial arts really did take over in the 90s. Actually, before that, really, but... Yeah.
And now everything is a martial arts movie in a lot of ways. Really, yeah, you think that it's a good dead genres, but it's just been swallowed up by everything else.
Most of the fighting you see, is definitely more aimed at martial arts than just brawling.
For sure. All right, well, that's going to wrap up our podcast on Blade 2. We want to thank you all for listening. As always, you can check us out on Spotify. And now we have a YouTube channel as well, The Movie Mavericks. Check us out over there on our channel. Subscribe, like the videos, and we have reviews and a lot more stuff coming for you. So check back often. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!